Welcome to The Church Planter's Life, a podcast exploring the possibilities and pain of starting a missional incarnational church. This podcast is a resource of the V3 movement. V3 is a grassroots training organization for men and women planters around the country. Thanks for tuning in as our host Matt Alexander leads the conversation.
Hey friends, welcome to the Planter's Life podcast. My name is Matt, hosting this little interview session down in Miami, Florida. And the Planter's Life, some of you guys may already know this, but the Planter's Life is sponsored and powered by the V3 movement and the V3 church planting movement. And V3 kind of exists to support and coach, train, encourage people that have a heart to make disciples and start a missional incarnational expression of the church in a neighborhood or a network in the area where they live. And so we love coming alongside folks who want to live on mission and disciple people into a missional way of following Jesus. And this podcast is just full of interviews with people who are doing that. So today we're talking with my friend Corey up in Portland, Oregon, who is the pastor and planter of Church for the Neighborhood. No, Church for Neighbors.
Church for Neighbors, yeah.
Church for Neighbors. And Corey, it's great to hang with you today.
Yeah. Good to be here. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Tell us a little bit about your context, a little bit about Portland, and maybe the specific part of Portland that you guys were in. And yeah. Also, how did you get into church planting? What was that journey like for you? And how did you kind of discern to plant in Portland?
So we're in Portland, Oregon. Depending on kind of the data you read, Portland is considered a kind of a post-Christian area of the U.S. It's definitely not a city that is rooted in Christendom. So my neighbors, I don't know. I like to think of it more. I talk about it more of like a post atheist culture, in the sense that, I think a lot of post Christendom, culture is like leaned up against Christendom, where there's a lot of like resistance. And I think probably Portland used to be a little bit more resistant of Christianity, where now I feel like at least my experience here has been that the city is pretty apathetic towards it. That I've not had a lot of resistance as a pastor or as a church. For the most part, it's been a really like clean slate openness of like, so what are you doing? What does a pastor do? What is a church? You know, it's just been, most of my friends in this city have no connection with church, and their parents or their upbringing had no connection with church. Mm-hmm. Which I love. It creates a different kind of challenge. I've not felt like I've had to like argue or debate the church's viability here. There's just been kind of like a, all right, well, good luck. We'll see how you do. So it's been a really beautiful time here for the last 3.5 years. It's just a real slow movement. I've heard one Portland pastor describe church in Portland as like your greatest competition is brunch, right? So like I think people would consider going to church as much as they would consider which restaurant they're going to eat brunch at. Like, that's kind of the level of objectivity or resistance or attraction to it. So we very intentionally moved into a neighborhood and incarnated into a neighborhood. Early on, we had a lot of conversations about being neighbors before we were a church. So the initial kind of team, all of us moved into the city. And so we really felt like it was important to move slow. I'd say too, like, if Portland is resistant of something, they're resistant of like institutional type stuff. So yeah, like all the kind of chain restaurants are outside the city. The Walmarts and the Targets are outside the city. In the city, it's just a lot of local restaurants, a lot of mom and pop shops. There's still a lot of that. So we really try to lean into that and really just embrace this idea that we're moving here to be neighbors, and out of our own lives and journey with Christ, that a church would emerge and a church would be born. And so far that seems to be happening. So, yeah. So I forget what the question even started was, but
that's great.
Yeah, is that good?
No,
yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's great. It's wonderful. So tell me this, if I came and kind of immersed myself in the community for a month, and I said, I'm going to be here for a month and I want to experience the life of following Jesus with this people, what would be some of the things I'd experience? And maybe what would be some of the kind of the core rhythms of the church kind of in this season?
Yeah, so a lot of shared life. And so we do have, I imagine most of the listeners of this podcast have some sort of relationship with church, probably a lot of church planters or pastors or people part of launch teams, that kind of stuff. And so we do have like a Sunday night gathering that in homes, started in one home, and now we've multiplied that to two homes. Mm-hmm. 5 p.m. on Sundays, there's like a meal at 5. That's a shared meal that everybody brings something to contribute. And after the meal is some kind of focus time that changes in season. So sometimes we'll be going through a book of the Bible. Like in November, we're going to go through the book of Philippians. Sometimes someone will teach. That's pretty uncommon, but it does happen a few times a year. And typically in response to maybe something we're discerning in the community. So that's not really a part of like a typical rhythm, but every once in a while, there's a sense that a teaching might help maybe frame the next season, or maybe give voice to something that's happened in the community. So we do different things in different seasons. So like around MLK weekend, the past few years, we've read some sermons by MLK and reflected on those. In the summer, we went through a season of having different members of the community share their stories and reflect around those. So we've done a lot of different rhythms and different times, and those just kind of are discerned as we go, kind of based on what's going on in the community.
Yeah.
So that's our Sunday thing. Sometimes we'll participate in a traditional style communion or Eucharist or Lord's Supper, and then sometimes we'll talk about the meal we're having as the Lord's Supper. So we just there's this loose framework that we build our life around. But that Sunday gathering, and this is what I think is challenging, maybe if you've grown up in church, that Sunday gathering by no means is the center of our community. Mm-hmm. It's just like a piece of it. We've made a lot of commitment to living in high proximity. And so that means we share a lot of life together through the week. And so if you were here for a month, there'd be a lot of times that maybe you'd grab lunch with someone in the community on their lunch hour. Mondays, there's often like there's a group of stay-at-home parents who often show up at one of their houses with all the kids on Mondays. On Thursday nights, a few times a month, there's a gathering of ladies in our community who get together and just kind of reflect on what's going on in their life together, spend some time praying through that stuff, praying through their life together. There's right now a Harry Potter marathon going on in our community that is on Monday nights. There's a group of people, I think this is the third annual. I'm not a Harry Potter watcher, so I don't go, but
that's serious.
We're looking together, have a meal, watch Harry Potter, just kind of spend some ordinary time together. But because we live in high proximity, like there's a lot of that stuff that just happens. That's sure. not necessarily organized by Church for Neighbors as an institution, but there's a lot of shared life. So you spend a lot of time. If you're here for a month, you spend a lot of time with people in the community and in the neighborhood. Maybe you'd hang out with me as I pick up my kid from school at 3:30, and we'd spend time at the park with all the other families in his kindergarten. Maybe, you know, so stuff like that. Maybe you could, you know, for me, my life is spent, a few days a week, pick my son up in kindergarten, spend time at the park. I coach a youth hockey team in Portland. So there'd be some evenings at the rink, maybe some week games on the weekend. So yeah, just a lot of ordinary time.
Yeah.
And we do. So yeah. So proximity is a big thing for us. The other big thing is practices. So we talk a lot about building our community around, prayer. But we don't define prayer as like a certain kind of prayer. So we have people in our community that grew up in maybe, you know, a traditional charismatic or, maybe non-denominational kind of free prayer kind of traditions. And sometimes that's welcomed. We have others who are maybe deconstructing some evangelical church stuff, and like liturgical kind of prayer has been really helpful for them as they've found their way. Other times, like we have times of confession. So Good Friday every year, we gather together at someone's house, typically someone who has a back deck. Those of us have kids, put our kids to bed in that house, and we'll sit around on the back deck, and every person will answer, "Where are you seeking resurrection?" That one question. That every year becomes this time of really, really powerful confession. So prayer takes a lot of different forms for us. Yes. And we welcome all of that. We don't dictate like this is specifically what prayer means for us. So same with like table, right? So table is one of our practices, and we talk about table in a sacramental way, where we definitely will gather up and have like a little amount of juice or wine and a small cracker and do the sacramental type thing. But then we talk about the practice of table in community and on mission. So table, sometimes, you know, you can make a moment sacramental as you're maybe walking with someone else in the neighborhood, or you're at the local bar having a drink, or you're sharing lunch together, that we can recognize Christ's presence in those spaces as well, and have these kind of table those moments as we gather together. So we practice table in that way. We talk a lot about a practice of sharing. We used to talk about sharing as a practice of generosity. Over time, that's become a practice of sharing. That generosity just seemed maybe too thin from what we were experiencing. So we share our resources together. We share our homes. We share what we have with each other. And so sometimes that means babysitting. Sometimes that means someone needs a car. Sometimes that means someone needs help with rent. Sometimes that means someone just needs to be sat with because they've lost a family member or a friend or a job. Sharing takes a lot of different forms for us, but we intentionally lean into that as a practice. The fourth practice we talk a lot about is word. And we would invite John 1 to define that for us. So when we say word, we don't mean the Bible. It definitely includes the Bible. But for us, word has like a cosmic reality to it, where John invites us to look at the word in a much larger scope. And so we're seeking the presence of Jesus, the presence of Christ in our everyday lives as a practice. Now, when we gather together, we have a practice of looking to the Bible to help us understand the word. So the Bible is definitely a huge part of our community, but the practices goes broader than that. So yeah, so proximity is huge. Practices are huge. And then we talk a lot about presence, and these all start with P, because most of our community hates that they all start with P. There's a saying somewhere like you can take the pastor out of the large evangelical church, but you can't take the large evangelical church out of the pastor. So the last one is presence, and it's just a commitment to being present to each other, to showing up for each other. There's a sense of like solidarity that we're trying to lean into. And then also being present to our neighborhood. So there's a theology of the soil, right? We're connected here. This is that we are in a place that has a story. There are people who live in this place. And so what does it look like to seek the presence of God in this place? And to be present with our own lives in this place, mm-hmm. right? And so mm-hmm. creating rhythms in the neighborhood. So those, like, we have these kind of words, these proximity and presence and practice that we like to talk about as more as temperatures as opposed mm-hmm. to like boundaries. Mm. And the more we find ourselves growing and leaning into these ways of life, the hotter our community burns, the stronger the spirit is burning in our community, and the more opportunity there are for people to be swept into a shared life, or as Paul would call it, a koinonia. So that's, I guess that's a 10,000 foot view.
That's great.
How things roll for us here in Portland.
Yeah, man. No, that's really good stuff. That's really good stuff. I like the three P's personally. That helps mm-hmm. to, no, just kidding. I mean,
it's sticky, right?
Yeah. I like, one of the things that strikes me is I like that there is a lot of fluidity, right? There's a lot of kind of organic elements of shared life, shared relationship, but there's also some pretty solid anchors mm-hmm. that kind of help to cultivate a shared life, right? There's some organization and some organic things, and there's a good, sounds like a cool mixture of both to help yeah. cultivate like this this koinonia, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's yeah. wonderful.
Yeah, we've really worked hard at creating a life that is easy for people to belong to, no matter their distance from the center. And so there are those that lean really heavily into these things, right? Like people that have like spent hundreds of thousands of dollars more on their home to live in closer proximity, right? That's a huge sure. decision for somebody to make, right?
And yeah.
We've worked really hard to get into like walking distance from each other. And it's crazy. Like that was probably a year and a half ago that a lot of people, we were like within, you know, 5-10 minute drives of each other. And a year and a half ago, people made some pretty strong commitments to get within walking distance of each other. Mm. And here we are, you know, a year out from that. And people are starting to have conversations about how can we get within baby monitor distance, where you could put your kids down and take the baby monitor across the street. And so people are like figuring out how to build ADUs, additional dwelling units in their backyards, so that someone in our community could live there. Right. Or how do I finish my basement in a way that someone in our community could live there? There's those that are like being really creative with their finances, so that if a house next door across the street comes for sale, you know, we're ready to maybe make that purchase so that someone in our community could live there. And so it's been really, it's really, really cool as the spirit is like, is drawing these just people in our community to make significant decisions, major life decisions around mm-hmm. a shared life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. What has been maybe one or two of the most life-giving elements of planting and pastoring kind of in a missional type of way of being the church, and what yeah. have been some of the life-draining elements of that as well?
I think it's the same answer for both, that living in high proximity with people is incredibly life-giving. The amount of people who have who love my kids, like as a parent, my kids, like every night are like, who's here for dinner tonight? Like it's just like every single night that's the question, right? They don't know any other life, you know, of the common practice of people being in our home for a meal or us being in someone else's home for a meal. And they're disappointed when the answer is it's nobody. it's just such a regular thing for them that, and for them to have like so many adults in their life who love them like family. It's amazing. It really is, really amazing and life-giving and gives this sense of like safety for me as a parent, in the sense that like raising kids is hard. It's scary. There's no blueprint for it, at least not one that I found. Every like book or blog I've read, makes sense until your kid doesn't fit that paradigm.
Right.
And then that book or blog isn't helpful, you know? And so, but what I found to be incredible is just like people loving each other, you know, and caring for each other and showing up for each other. So that's been incredibly life-giving. But living in high proximity with people is hard. Like it's really, really hard work. I think you can't hide, you can't escape. I see people in our community by accident all the time. There's no, you know, I pastored in traditional church before this. I don't have an office that I can go to and shut the door, and I don't have a house that I drive to that's away from my community to go to at night. They live on my street. They show up at our house and walk, and we do for them too. It's not like, this is not a me,
right.
As the pastor, having a hard time establishing boundaries. For us, like boundaries are really, really fluid and seasonal, and difficult. But it's the life that we've chosen, and we feel like it's a life that we're being invited into, as a way to, you know, I think in reality, it's like putting on display the kingdom of God in this city. I think when you're in like an apathetic, city towards faith or religion, or Christ, like something has to be seen. Like there's nothing I'm going to say that is going to convince anybody that Jesus is real. But man, our neighbors, and people we're walking with are incredibly fascinated by our community. There's so many people, and I think we're like moving into this culturally, but we're a really young city. I'm 33. I think I fit probably like the average age of my neighborhood. I think there's just a lot of loneliness in our way of life nowadays with people our age. Whether it's technology or the way the workforce works nowadays or the amount that people have to work to afford to live here, you know, there's a lot of reasons, and we can have a much longer conversation about how we can be a prophetic witness against that, but the reality is people are, a lot of people are lonely, and the only adults who love their children are their parents and their aging grandparents, and that's it, right? Because family units are smaller. Like there's a lot of factors involved. But my kids, like they could name, like very, very quickly, they could name 15 adults who love them, who live within a walking distance of them, right? Like that's amazing. And that's just like one slice of the fruit of doing life this way. So it's both like training at times and the best thing. It's the worst of times is the best of times, right? Like all of it. But to me, it's like so worth it. Like it's so worth it. What has emerged here, what has grown from this soil is beautiful. It's really, really beautiful. Jesus tells a story, about a mustard seed that is planted, and this big, beautiful tree grows, and this tree has branches, and birds come and rest in its branches. And that parable, has been a really important parable for us because, our community is definitely a community that has some branches of people who have grown up through and are very tied to the ground, and that our community definitely has people who are birds who come and rest for a while and leave. And man, that's painful for the tree, right? Like, we've come to love and care for these birds, and they've become a part of our families, and our kids love them. But their desire is not to be a branch or a part of the tree, and they fly on to whatever next tree they're going to land in. And so that's like really painful and really beautiful and really, really hard. But Jesus says it's all the kingdom, right? Like, the kingdom of God is the whole picture, that there are birds and there are branches, and those birds are invited in full participation of the ecosystem while they're here, even though they're likely going to leave at some point. And it's tough, but it's so important and so beautiful for us as we pursue a life in the kingdom.
Yes. Yeah. What do you know now that you wish you knew when you guys got rolling? Maybe one or two things that come to mind.
What do I know now that I wish I knew? Man, that's so hard. That's such a difficult question, I think, to reflect on, because who we are now is so much shaped by what we didn't know then.
Sure.
So many of the mistakes we made then, and the hardships we walked through then have shaped who we are today. And I don't know if like changing them would have been as fruitful, you know, like, I think those like hard seasons, and maybe that's it, right? Like maybe that is the best answer, in the sense that I wish I knew then that the hard stuff is just like a part of it. And I think I knew that in my head. But I now, like, when our church goes through like trials, when there's interpersonal struggle, when people are having life crisis, and we're again like in high proximity with each other, I feel a lot more calm about it now. I don't need to fix this right away. I don't need to like involve myself as the savior in every situation. That it's okay if we just very slowly walk through the hard seasons and embrace them. I think early on, I came in like so excited about all these cool ideas I had, and that every like hardship was a distraction from this cool thing I was trying to create, you know, or this vision that I had, or these things that like I was, you know, coming out of a church staff situation, right? Like, I finally was going to get to have all my ideas, you know, at once into this church planting thing. And so when, you know, two people in our community weren't getting along, it was like, come on, like, this is a distraction from what we're here to do. Rather than stopping and realizing, no, like, this is what we're here to do.
Yeah.
Like, we're here to work through these disagreements and learn about what God is teaching us through this disagreement. Like, the church is not a place where everybody who is like each other gets together just to get along and give each other high fives. Like, it's a place that we come together and we choose each other. And if there's no conflict, if there's no disagreement, if there's no hardships, like, we don't have the opportunity to choose each other. But having the chance to choose each other, like, is huge. And shapes us in the way of Jesus, and allows us to become the community that he's calling us and inviting us to become. I think early on, it was really hard for me to understand that whatever is happening among us is the work. Like, that is the work. The work is not figuring out how to find three words that all start with P that people could like understand and build a life around, right? The work was not figuring out how to perfectly name our practices so they could both be powerful for those that are committed in their walk with Jesus and invitational to those who think it's all a joke, right? Like early on, I spent so much time working on and thinking about that stuff and maybe like avoiding some like the actual work of working on our shared life together. Because ultimately, if something's going to bear witness in our community, it's going to be the way that we love each other. My community doesn't care about our three P's, and my neighborhood like doesn't care about the names of our practices and how well I can articulate those. our community can take notice of the way that we love each other, right? I think this is what John is, again, is trying to communicate about the way of life of Jesus' disciples, right? That people knew they were the disciples of Jesus by the way that they loved each other. There's a lot of, like, families love each other, but the way that families love each other is not always the way of Jesus, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I coach a hockey team and my hockey players love each other, but the way that these hockey players love each other is not the way that a Jesus community loves each other. There's a uniqueness about the way we love each other as a Jesus-centered community. And it's that way that can really, I think, begin to bear witness in our community. Mm. And that way takes time. Like, it takes a lot of time. I think even like talking about it for me is still, there's a challenge for me inside of it, because I feel like we're in a world today where people, you know, when you're church planning, it seems so unknown that you want to, like, latch on to something that somebody else is doing. And I'm not sure what we're doing is worthy of latching on to yet. Like talk to me when we hit year 10, right?
Sure.
I don't know that it's fruitful to, like, shine a spotlight on what we're doing until we've shown some faithfulness to each other and to our neighbors. Because ultimately, like, I think if there's a way forward in, like, a post-atheist culture, it's going to be a group of people who are going to be faithful to each other for a long period of time. Mm. If there's a formula, I think it's faithful presence over time. Like, that's the formula. Faithfully present to each other, faithfully present to what God is doing among us, faithfully present to a neighborhood, to the soil, over a long period of time. And I think that becomes a garden that the Spirit of God could do something really unique in. And then it'll be on us to surrender to whatever the Spirit is doing. You know, if we want to plant seeds in the garden of the kingdom, I think we have to be willing to eat what that garden produces. And so, like, you know, talk to me again in, you know, 5 to 10 years, and we'll see if any of these peas or these practices remain.
Yeah,
and I don't care if they do, but I'm really hopeful that these people remain. And that we can bear witness to a group of people being radically faithful to each other in the way of Jesus.
Yeah. Good stuff, dude. Well, thanks again for being with us today. If someone wanted to keep in touch with you or the community online, where could they find out more about what you guys are up to or stay connected?
Yeah. I mean, if you search, you can find, like, we have a website, churchforneighbors.com. It hasn't been updated in probably 2 years.
Okay.
I'm not sure why, again, like, I'm not sure why I made it, but I felt like I was supposed to do that as a church planner.
Sure.
It never gets referenced. It's pretty hard to find on Google, but it exists. There's an Instagram that gets something posted on it, like, maybe once a year. So that's out there too. Honestly, like, if you'd like to connect with us, you can shoot me an email. It's just my full name at gmail.com, CoryDoiron@gmail.com. Corey Do Iron is the phonetic way to say that, at gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and all that same stuff. And that might be the best way to connect in any kind of relational way.
Great. Well, thanks again for hanging out with us today, dude. It was great to hear more about the journey and what y'all are up to in the neighborhood.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, anybody who wants to learn more about V3 and some of the coaching and training and resources that we have going on, you can go to the website, which is the V3movement.com.
We hope you discovered something meaningful in this podcast for your church planting journey. To connect with our training, tribe, and tools, go to thev3movement.org.